R. Table track 1.
And welcome to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. With me is my co-host, Alan Hensel.
Hey, Bob.
How's it going?
Doing real well, Bob. I hope you're okay on this fine, nice spring day.
Oh, I know. It's a wonderful spring day. I can't wait for summer.
Same here.
Yeah. So let me ask you this question, Alan. I know you and I, we discuss a lot of things off the air, but I want to bring some of it on the air tonight. I want to talk a little sports, if I may, to begin the program anyway.
Sure.
And I want your take on whether or not you feel that Dave Dombrowski is desperate to bring David Price back to the Red Sox. Do you think he's desperate enough where he's rushing the process?
You actually, Bob, probably know a little bit more about that if you've been following his return, David Price, because the last that I heard was that he might not be ready till sometime late June, early July. But then I had spoken to you offline last week, and you had thought that the process would be sooner. I'm not aware of any rotator cuff problems, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have some kind of sustainable injury that may need eventually surgical correction. Well, are you getting that impression at all, Bob?
Well, apparently then I need to update you, because right now as we speak, David Price is in Pawtucket on rehab assignments. He has a rehab assignment scheduled for Friday, and with any luck, he'll be back with the Red Sox middle of next week.
And my guess is, based on, protocol for people returning from injuries like this, is they're going to do a lot of monitoring between starts, and they'll probably watch his pitch count carefully. They'll probably check him every half inning after he comes out, make sure that there's no tightness anywhere. And my guess is it's probably not going to hurt them long term if they do it carefully.
I see. I just wanted to get your take on that before I change topics. I want to get into a topic that I feel is more national in nature, since we have a lot of listeners all around the country. And before I forget, I just want to acknowledge some people who would probably be listening to this podcast when it's all over. I want to acknowledge and thank Steve Theberge publicly for allowing this show to be put on his YouTube channel. Also, Jose Tamayo, for making the same offer, and for JS Web Solutions, who took the effort to link my podcasts to Facebook, as well as to my blog, for all of my subscribers to subscribe to them. So thank you, JS Web Solutions, for that. I want to know your thoughts on global warming, if you have any.
Well, yeah, I do. Having studied climatology some back in the day, and being very much interested in weather overall, having pretty much been locked in since probably 68, 69, which is some 47, 48 years, Bob, my feeling about global warming is this. I don't think that meteorology or climatology, in this case, has enough data over a period of time to ascertain whether we're going through a man-made global warming phase. The other thing about global warming, notice how it was labeled starting out. Back in the early 2000s, late 1990s, when Al Gore sort of politicized the whole thing and then got it going, it was called global warming. Then a series of yearly data reports came back from various locations around the globe, and somewhere around 2012, maybe ish 11, 12, 13, you notice, Bob, they changed it from global warming to climate change. And that was kind of indicative of the feelings that I had, that maybe it was a little bit too soon to start saying that we're responsible for the cause of a trend toward more warming in the atmosphere. The term climate change, to me, denotes that they're not sure which way it's going to go in any given location year to year. So it almost sounds like they backed off. Also remember Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, I think, was the name of the movie and the book back in the late 90s. By 2016, which was last year, there was supposed to be significant coastal flooding, market increases in areas where there was a lot of snow. There would be less snow in areas where it was arid and deserts. There was going to be a lot of rain. And clearly that hasn't happened yet. I'm not saying that global warming or climate change is a hoax. However, I'll say that I think it's a little bit too early for us to say that something like that of that magnitude is taking place. The other problem is that you can have swings. So like over a 7 to 10 period, you may have temperatures moving up and then over another 7 to 10 period, the temperatures may move down again. The last thing I'll definitely say about it though, Bob, and I say this to all my friends who try to refute that there could be any global warming going, it doesn't help our environment the more carbon gases and things of that nature that we continue to pump into the atmosphere. Hundreds of billions of tons of carbon per year is being pumped into the air, and that cannot be good. Regardless of whatever's going on, that can't be good, and I really do think that it's the responsible thing to move as much as we can in an economical and responsible way towards sustainable energy, Bob. I guess those are my general thoughts.
And I really respect and understand those thoughts. I agree with most, if not all, of what you said. To begin with, I don't believe that there is global warming per se. I like the term climate change better, because despite what man puts in our atmosphere and has done so for the past several centuries, yep, this Earth has gone through a lot of climate change, warmer and colder. Of course, you're very familiar with the Ice Age that we had recently, and even more recently, the fact that we had some very cold periods, I think in the 15th, 16th, or 17th centuries. So despite what man may do or not do to the atmosphere, this whole Earth by nature works through cycles.
Sure.
So what would be wrong if we thought that despite everything that's being said about global warming, that couldn't it be possible that the Earth is going through another cycle?
Yes, and I think too, Bob, where they label it climate change, they're bringing environmental awareness to the forefront, which I think can only be a good thing. So if we can stop polluting as much as possible, I think that's a good thing.
Well, let me say this. How desperate do you think we should be, or what kind of desperate measures should we as society take in order to comply with all of these environmentalists? In other words, going green or making sure that rooftops are brighter in color. I've even heard that mentioned, that a lot of rooftops are too dark and it's absorbing heat.
I think you can really get into the ridiculous, don't you, Bob? For instance, I have solar panels up on my roof, and it's because I primarily wanted to save money on my electric bills. And I've cut my bills down about 40%. I'm saving between $30 and $70 a month on electricity because I have my home business. We have three people now living in the house. We do use a lot of electricity. I need my work office here. So we do use a lot of electricity. And the secondary reason, of course, is that I've always been, you know, a solar buff. I started wearing solar watches back in the early 1980s. Actually, 1979 was my first one, and I currently have one on my wrist right now. Any chance I can get to And I don't make a religious thing out of it, Bob. I don't worship the sun gods or the solar gods or the windmill gods or anything like that. But as technology becomes more available and affordable, then I'll try to do my part to save some money myself and contribute to not polluting quite as much in the environment. So you asked me a question, do we need to resort at this point to desperate measures? My answer is no. I think we still are quite dependent on fossil fuels. They're not obviously good for the environment in many ways, but they're the most affordable and plentiful source of energy right now. And if we just move gradually toward other sustainable forms of energy and be developing them while we're cutting across fossil fuels, so that hopefully we get to a point, Bob, where we use more and more sustainable and less fossil, so that we get to a point where we can just gradually and willingly, without having to resort to those desperate measures, just phase out one and phase in another without too much economic hardship. Do you agree with that?
I do. Now, what about future prognostications? I've heard that eventually, if the glaciers melt any further, that you might see more beach erosion, more of the East Coast dissipating. And I was wondering if you think that's going to be a reality.
Well, it could eventually, Bob, if the atmosphere either naturally or with our help warms to a point where a lot of that ice in the poles dissipates, melts. It's going to add to the water that's down here right now. So, sure, sea levels will rise. I don't have the exact figures, but if you look at that Inconvenient Truth from Al Gore, he's got a computer mapped out in the scenario that he talks about, X number of hundreds of billions of gallons of ice melt into water, it will bring the sea level up by those amounts. Will it happen in our lifetime? Doubtful, in my opinion, but remains to be seen.
Well, we certainly will see, and hopefully man will be cognizant enough of what's going on to be able to do the right thing. As the old saying goes, Alan, there's one side of the issue, and then there's the other side of the issue, and then somewhere in the middle there is the truth.
I agree. And that's where you look at is in the middle, Bob. So you listen to two extreme scenarios and map somewhere in the middle, and that's probably where it'll be over the next 10 to 20 years.
Indeed. So from my perspective, to be honest with you, when it gets real cold in New England, and as you know, Alan, in the past couple of years, up until this year, we've had very cold winters. And in fact, if you remember in 15, how snowy it was in 15.
Yep.
Okay?
Sure.
I look at that, obviously, and I say, global warming my foot. But then I have to realize the Earth's climates work in balance. And if you recall that year, we had a very, very cold winter in most of the Northeast, okay? But remember what the Southwest was like while this was going on.
You're right.
It was warm. It was it was almost 90 degrees in L.A. in February. So that's where the people who talk about global warming think that they're right.
And that's, Bob, you just brought out a very astute point. When it comes to climatology, there's something called the energy budget, the global energy budget, and basically it works off of fluid dynamics. The atmosphere is always trying to reach a point of thermal equilibrium. So whenever there's a hot spot somewhere within a couple of thousand miles, there's an equal amount of pressure to bring that temperature back down again in that area. And that's exactly what you're talking about.
Sure, exactly.
And that's going on all around the world.
Right, right. Well, I wanted to get your thoughts on that because, you know, let's face it, Al, we've known each other since 1969. And one of the things that I remember about you more than most anything else is the fact that you always had a fascination for weather and its attributes.
Haven't lost that desire either, Bob. Even today, I'm always hyped up and excited prior to any big storms that are pending. So it's you never lose that when you've got that desire to want to, you know, kind of commiserate and predict Mother Nature. If it's in your blood, as with anything else that's in one's blood, it never leaves you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I have one more topic to bring up before we conclude.
Okay.
And that would be, and this is a subject that I know you're very, very vocal about, and I'm going to put this on a national perspective as well. I don't want to keep it local because of the fact we have numerous listeners throughout the country. The NFL, Roger Goodell, the commissioner, do you think it's time that we have him replaced by somebody else?
I think the time to have done that, Bob, is long past. The league itself, I have my theories as to how he could do so many egregious things, not just to the Patriots either, but and then still be here. I have theories about that. But the time, I think, for him to be gone or for us to kind of wish for that kind of reality and really hope that it's going to occur, probably passed about 2 to 3 years ago during the Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson situations when, you know, when those two guys were, you know, running around doing egregious things and the league was punishing them in an inconsistent way. Now, granted, with Adrian Peterson, the league didn't get any help from the court system, ironically enough, you know, because with Tom Brady, the court system actually obviously punished him or upheld Roger Fraudel's Framegate suspension. And so he was able to, rather he had to serve. So I think the owners love Roger Fraudel because he's their stooge. He's the guy that when they want something done, they tell him to get it done. And as long as they stand behind him, which appeared to be the case throughout Framegate, which most people commonly know as Deflategate, then he's going to feel like he's in an immune bubble and he can do whatever he wants. He can be his own judge, jury, and executioner, as it turns out. And so the owners love him. He's making them money. You know, he's doing everything. He's doing their bidding entirely, in my opinion. And they're going to keep him around. I also think, I'm not sure if you recall this, but back in the early or mid first decade of the 2000s, around 04, 05, right before Roger Fraudel was hired, there were some rumors, Bob, that the No Confidence League, again, better known as the National Football League, were talking to different people in regards to the commissionership as Taliabu was getting ready to exit out and they were looking for a new commish. One of the people that was strongly rumored that they talked to was Condi Rice, Condoleezza Rice, and she declined it. I heard that they actually offered the job to her as commissioner and that she turned it down. Now, that wasn't confirmed by anybody, just a rumor. But if that were the case, based on what we've seen Roger the Dodger Fraudel having done over the past 4 or 5 years, Bob, in being a lackey and a stooge to the rest of the owners, my thought is they probably spelled out the parameters to her, and she said, you know what, I'm nobody's stooge, I'm nobody's lackey, so thanks but no thanks, I think I'll decline. That's just my own theory.
I find Roger Goodell's practices very inconsistent to begin with. We could talk about Brady's suspension or Adrian Peterson or Ray Rice or all the other cases that Goodell had to explore throughout his tenure as commissioner. And I really find him to be a very, very inconsistent commissioner. And you gotta be fair to all of these people, pro and con. You know, the people who are being punished in football or the teams that are being punished in football. There has to be some form of fairness, and I don't see that.
Well, and let me amplify that exact point, Bob. You may recall during the time where the Patriots had temporarily gotten a stay from Judge Richard Berman on Fraudel's suspension back during the 16-15 season. And toward the end of that year, toward the end of the season, you may recall Ndamukong Suh, a known dirty player for the then Detroit Lions, stepped on somebody's foot. This was probably his seventh or eighth offense. And initially, Fraudel suspended him for, I believe, one game, the last game of the season. And he went to Fraudel on bended knees and asked him to please forgive him. He said, Mr. Commissioner, I promise you I won't do this again. I've learned my lesson. And what did Roger Fraudel do? He said, you know what? I think you have. We're going to let that game go so everything's okay. Now, contrast that with the fact that when Tom Brady got into trouble with Framegate, regarding Framegate, as Fraudel was dealing out that punishment through his lackey, Troy Vincent, as his spokesperson, he said, you know, the Patriots are repeat offenders. I mean, none of this stuff, Bob, would have stuck in a court of law. Yet, if the Patriots are repeat offenders and Brady is a first-time offender, he still manages to get whacked in that whole process, despite the fact that Ted Wells, exonerated Bob Kraft and Bill Belichick completely from any knowledge of what was supposedly going on. What was the verdict? There was a strong likelihood that Tom Brady was either knowledgeable of or participatory in the whole idea of deflating footballs. Despite the fact that they absolved Kraft and Belichick, however, Fraudel went and did a watusi on their bones by giving him a fine and taking away first and fourth round picks. And then he whacked Tom Brady for doing basically nothing at all except for what? Perhaps destroying a cell phone. So, yeah, there's no consistency. When you look at Ndamukong Suh and you look at Tom Brady and you look at the reasons behind each punishment, you're absolutely correct, Bob. No rhyme, reason, structure, or consistency in anything that Fraudel does. I have absolutely no respect for that clown.
Do you believe that his actions against Brady were based on jealousy of the Patriots? I mean, I shouldn't use the term jealousy when it concerns the commissioner, because he is, after all, the commissioner. My thing is that the league, I believe, as a whole, is jealous of the Patriots for all that they've done since 2000. And would Goodell be the mouthpiece for the rest of the league?
Absolutely correct. I don't think it was Fraudel who was jealous. I think he was acting on the directive of some core owners, and I have my suspicion about three or four of them, in what they were telling Fraudel to do, or, you know, strongly recommending that he do. And I think he just basically went out and did their bidding, and there may have been quite a few more than just, you know, the three or four that I'm thinking about. So, yes, I do think there was jealousy. I don't think it was directly related to Fraudel, but I think it was in people who wanted him to do their bidding, yes.
Certainly. Well, Al, I think our first show is about to wrap up, and I want to thank you for taking the time.
Hey, Bob, I wanted to ask you one question. I think maybe you and I can lead off with this topic, and perhaps if some of your listeners listen to your podcast, perhaps they'll have some thoughts in there as well, and we might be able to bring a few other thoughts in. My question to you, I'd like to maybe make this a discussion for the next time, was the David Ortiz effect this year real? And if so, are we over it?
Yes and maybe.
Okay. That was pretty quick.
Yes and maybe.
Yeah, okay. I think yeah. I'm pretty much agreeing with that, Bob. Yeah.
Before
but
we...
maybe we can bring that back next time and elaborate that on more fully, and maybe some of your listeners will have some thoughts on that as well.
True. And before I close, I just want to let the listeners know that they could send their comments. There are a lot of ways for them to send comments. As they listen, they'll know how to send them. They can email me. They can put them on Facebook, put them in however format they want. And maybe we can have a chance to read some of the comments on the air, if at all possible. I'm not going to guarantee that can happen, but we'll try. Al, thank you for being with me this
evening. As always, delightful.
On In Perspective. This is Bob Branco. He's Al Hensel. Thanks for listening, everybody.